So, giving is a wonderful subject to talk about. Typically, that's done in order to get people motivated to give. In our fellowship, we have a tendency to, that looks like a Dell computer up there. Is this just different than what's up here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Typically, at least in, maybe not typically, but in our fellowship, talents and treasures are a part of what God has given us to give. And also time is a big part of that. And I always remember it with the three T's. I read it somewhere in a book. Time, talents, and treasures. You can think about giving from a responsibility perspective, or you can think about giving from a blessing perspective, a multiplying perspective. And that's pretty much how we look at it. We have taken seriously the passage that he was reading from, that Dennis was reading from, about, you know, we don't want to do what we do because we have to do it. We do it because we want to do it, and we want to experience the freedom that giving provides. So I was thinking about this, and the post that we did this week, if you had a chance to look at that, Bernie and I just talked a little bit about giving God and knowing a giving God, and then God giving is a certain kind of giving. So they kind of go together. You know, if you know a giving God, then you understand God giving. Because that's really what God's interested in, is God giving, and that's what he's trying to describe and explain in the scriptures. And we have our history with giving. We've been married, gosh, who knows how many years, I've lost count. But giving wasn't something that we understood. We understood it as a concept, but we didn't understand it as something that we participated in. And so it took a number of years for us to probably just understand who the giving God was. And I think once we understood more about the giving God, then understanding more about God giving became just easier to implement in our lives. And so I know there's some teenagers sitting here right now, and you're going, I don't have anything. Why do I even need to think about giving at all? More than teenagers, right. Yeah. And you guys know the story of the two people that were giving in the temple, and the one guy came in and, you know, he's, weeping and wailing and making a big deal out of his giving. And then this little old lady goes in and drops in her cent, or her portion of a cent, and Jesus notices. And he says, I'm interested in the portion of the cent. I'm not looking for the people who are looking for recognition in their giving. And it's really important to understand that God really doesn't need our money. God doesn't need our time. God doesn't need our talents. We get to invest those things in what God is doing around us. And that's a little bit different than thinking that God is conscripting us, or that he's going to be somehow multiplied by what we give. If we don't have the kind of heart that the scriptures describe, nothing will be multiplied. All it will be is transferring money from one place to another. And like it says clearly, you will have your reward for that kind of giving. So I want to talk about that a little bit today as it relates to the subject of giving. I'd like you to turn over to Isaiah 55. I wanted to spend some time in that passage. And it's interesting, I was led there this week, just like Dennis was led there because Emily was led there, because they were thinking about giving. And as they were thinking about giving, they were thinking about the whole idea of seed and of sower and of bread. And you can't help but just imagine when Paul was reading along in Isaiah at whatever point in his life, or he'd gone back to Isaiah and pulled out the scrolls, because it wasn't as easy as going to your personal device, that when he went back and looked at Isaiah and he looked at what he was trying to explain in 2 Corinthians, how how monumental an understanding of this principle is. And so I'd like you to turn to Isaiah 55, and I'd like to just go through this passage a little bit together. But before we do that, so that'll give you a chance to like read it, but you know, there's so much combined wisdom in this group of people that I'm really interested in a way that would be audible for everybody in the room, because it's obvious from last week that we did this that there are people who can't hear a thing anymore, and I get that. I understand that. And when I say anymore, I'm not implying about age or anything like that. I'm just saying any longer. But I'm interested, you know, what are the principles that you feel like God has taught you about him being a giving God or about God giving? I'd like just to take a minute and hear a few of those things. What have you learned from God about giving? Dennis? Yeah, he pours it out. And the lavish is a good translation of that, because it's just like God is like pouring out, and that, and he's the gold standard for giving. Bernie?
Not to be afraid of it. He even says, tell me the book of the mouth. Right. Not to be afraid of it. And then he says, just test me.
Oh, you're talking about Malachi, the last Italian prophet. Yeah, test me in this. Yeah, that's actually that passage in Malachi. We're not going to talk about it, but I would guess it's in one of the docs that was in the presentation that we sent out. But that's a very central passage in the process of learning how to give. So that's a good one. Good. Josh.
I think I've really learned how giving can compound even more exponentially than we can even imagine. I know when we first moved into our house, a lot of problems to fix and things would happen. It just blew my mind when my dad and brother would always be readily available, or in the middle of the night or something would happen. And then I had a friend. Ever since my dad and brothers have kind of shown that, it's made me want to help more people other ways, you know, and
yeah, even while you're talking, I'm thinking maybe needs like the whole point, right? You know, need happens, and so people respond to need based on God, and then that multiplies. Yeah, that's a good example. Skip.
It seems to me, from what I understand about the good news of the kingdom, is that the tangible reflection of my experiencing of the good news is how generous I can be toward others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generosity is a thread, you know, all the way through the scriptures that God just teaches in so many different ways and tries to get us to understand the benefits of that. Good. Dean? Because?
Because what teaching on giving would be complete without someone who could leave and say, I visited that church and it was about stewardship.
Yes, we do have visitors. But really, we only talk about this once every couple of years.
So thinking about this and what you said about God giving, it makes me think of, and I thought about this around Christmas time too, about in Corinthians where Paul says, thanks be to God for his unspeakable gift. And I spent some time thinking about what that means, what's an unspeakable gift. And it just makes me think of something. The first thing that came to mind, something that you wouldn't ask for. And I think about God's gift to us and how, you know, when God offers us this gift, most of the time, it's something that we don't even know how badly we need it or if we even need it. And if we did know, it's too much. It's too much to ask for.
Yeah, I like that translation, indescribable, because that's reflective of what you were talking about. How do you get to the root of what God has done for us? Good. Chad?
I can just reiterate, I think, a little bit of what I heard when Dennis was up talking.
Get a little bit louder.
When Dennis was up, he used the phrase, throw caution to the wind, and I was just thinking that in our experience, the times that we engage at that level, we're all in, we want to give, it's from our heart, and then when we can do it in a way that people see Jesus and not us, that's the goal.
Yeah. Can you say suck in church like that? Yeah, well, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, I remember the whole idea of, I heard somebody teach once on hilarious giving, you know, and it was kind of a bizarre teaching that I was watching, but the idea was that it was supposed to come out of a heart of overabundance and not of just measuring out what I'm going to give back to God, whether it's my time or my talents or my treasures, but it's just like it's kind of like the gushing that's coming out. Good. Well, this side has done very well. Dennis, why don't you kick off this side and see what kind of... Yes, Dennis.
Oh, me?
You're the man.
Physical treasure of silver and gold, and yet that's not really what's valuable to the Lord, and that's what he's been teaching us and me over the years, and continues to teach me the treasures he's given me in you, in people, and in knowing people, and how they are looking back on life, that's where the real treasure is, that he's giving you those relationships. It's just such a blessing. That doesn't discount the coinage side of things, but for us to remember that he's given us people, the treasure.
I'm assuming, I was thinking as you were talking, I'm assuming that the amount of gold on the earth is finite, right? I mean, we mine more gold and we pull more out, but if you look at the earth, it's got to be a finite amount of gold. So if you took it out of everybody's teeth and out of all of the different mountains and whatever, if you took it all out, and as you were talking, Dennis, I was thinking, how much gold would that be? You know, because like Solomon had like 666 talents, which was like a huge amount of actual wealth. But if you took all of the gold, and then as you were talking about that, I was thinking, how will that stack up against a city that is clear gold, like transparent glass? That is 1,500 miles high, 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles deep. How will that pile of gold compare to that? And I'm guessing it's just not going to be much compared to the glory of God and the gold that is true value and true worth. Yeah, Eric. In fact, maybe that's why it's so hard for us to understand the lavish aspects of God's giving, because we're so driven by scarcity when it comes to the things of value on the earth. Good. Excellent. Anything else? Gary? Hard to comprehend, isn't it? Yeah. Well, good. Well, over to Isaiah 55, because I'd like to spend a little bit of time there. And, you know, I love the New American Standard Version. And I really like, you know, Dennis was reading out of the message today. This is one of the unfortunate places in the New American Standard, because look at how the chapter starts. Ho. I'm kind of looking at that. How do you translate that into our world and have anybody take it seriously? So I think it kind of means, wow. Like, I want to get your attention. I want to draw you in. Because I knew there were people here who were going to be thinking that as soon as I went. Ho! Everyone who thirsts, comes. So now we're over that, right? And if you weren't thinking that way, then I'm sorry. Let everyone who thirsts come to the waters. Now think about time and talents and treasures, okay? Because we're looking at the scope of God's giving, and not just the ones that we have, but think about God's time, God's talents, and God's treasures. Because what we experience here is only a reflection of something much greater. But God has all three. God has time, because he created it, and he's investing in time. He has talents and gifts. I mean, look at who he is and look at what he's done. And then he also has wealth. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come and buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why do you, and this is the contrast here, why do you spend money for what is not bread and your wages for what does not satisfy? And what a comment and what a commentary that is on humanity. It's true now as it was then. Why do you spend your money for what is not bread? What doesn't actually have some nourishing value? Now, just from a culture perspective where we are at right now, and then looking at humanity and history, just think about that. Why do we spend our money on things that are not substantive like bread? And why do we spend our wages for that which does not satisfy? For that which does not ultimately satiate what we're thinking it's going to satiate. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good and delight yourself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen that you may live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you. Now that word for live there means make your soul alive. So incline your ear, come to me, then listen that you may see your soul come alive. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you according to the faithful mercies shown to David. Behold, I have made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and a commander for all the peoples. Behold, you will call a nation you do not know and a nation which knows you not to run to you, because the Lord your God, even the one Holy One of Israel, for he has glorified you. Well, what is that nation? It's God's nation. It's the royal priesthood. We have been called into the royal priesthood where the true substance resides, which it doesn't reside in humanity. And then, so he explains, then that's the context. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he's near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, and he will have compassion on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. My thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the high as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So what this passage, I think, is teaching us is that you don't really want to evaluate your life or evaluate the world based on other standards than God's. Because God, in the final analysis, is the one who assigns value. He will determine what remains. He will determine what lasts forever. For as the rain and snow come down from heaven, so there's like an argument in this, and this argument is in the book of Isaiah, which is a prophecy, so you have to kind of follow it through, but I think we're being faithful to the text here. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there without watering the earth and making it bear and sprout, and when it comes down, it furnishes seed to the sower and bread to the eater. Why? Because bread is the only thing that really sustains people. What do we ultimately need? You know, we need food and we need water, right? And then clothing is kind of nice, you know, to come right after that. But the reality is that what more does a person need than those things? So will my word be which goes forth from my mouth. It will not return to me empty. It's going to go out and accomplish the purpose of my values. And that's why we're at such odds with what God is doing on the face of the earth and why we feel like we have to build our own towers. Because we're not satisfied with God's economy and God's perspective. And without succeeding in the matter for which I sent it, because it's the nature of my word. When that happens, when that connection is made, when you and I receive seed from the sower and bread for the eater, when we receive that from God and when it begins to multiply in a kingdom way that really can feed the soul of another person, because that's the most important thing, right? Well, that's when verse 12 comes in. As that happens and as that process happens, you will go out with joy. You will be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills will break forth into shouts of joy. And all the trees of the field will clap their hands. Instead of the thorn bush, the cypress will come up, and instead of the nettle, the myrtle will come up, and it will be a memorial to the Lord for an everlasting sign which will not be cut off. And so you see, like, the whole process, God is explaining to us that he has sent his word out into the world. He wants his word to grow. When God's word grows, it produces bread. And it produces the manna that comes down from heaven. So again, it's a thread that's tied all the way through the scriptures. So what does it mean to me? Well, I have to be careful how I live to make sure that I'm living based on God's economy related to what comes down from heaven. And if I look at my life, I've got to look at my life and go, what is being nourished here that is from God, and what is being nourished here that is not from God? And that's the rub, right? That's what we're experiencing. That's what we're in every day. That's all what the battle is about, is trying to figure out how do we nourish true spiritual things and see them grow and result in bread that is going to feed other people. So I think whether you're a teenager or whether you're an old dude and somebody in between, I think the idea of asking yourself the question, what kind of seed is being produced in my life? What kind of bread? You know, sooner or later, I mean, you might be able to get by for a number of years and go, well, I'm not really producing anything yet, although I'm not sure that's really accurate, because doesn't a 10-year-old have just as much opportunity ultimately as a 90-year-old or an 80-year-old or whatever? But when it comes down right down to it, I think asking ourselves the question, what is being produced in my life? And If it's something that's substantive, if it's making bread for other people, if it's seeds that are growing, if it's kingdom seeds, and those kingdom seeds are growing up into a crop, and if that crop is able to be harvested, and then bread is being able to, or able to be made from it, then I'm living a kingdom life. And that's what giving is all about. Giving is all about nourishing the kingdom life inside of us. So whether we look at our time, our talents, our treasure, we have to ask ourselves the question, what is being nourished in our lives? And if you can figure this out, and if you can figure out how to ask yourself this question on an ongoing basis, it's worth asking when you're in junior high. It's worth asking when you're in high school. I didn't start asking it until I was 21 years old. It's been worth asking in my 20s. It's been worth asking as I've raised a family with Bernie. And it's been worth asking as our grandchildren have been born. It's been worth asking as our life has unfolded, as we made all of these decisions. You ask yourself the question, what kind of bread is being produced? And maybe more importantly, the word of God coming down from heaven, how is that taking root in my heart and producing seeds, seeds of the kingdom? So that was really good for me to think about, and it's a cool picture. Turn over to 2 Corinthians. We've alluded to it today, but I'd like to read it because, you know, basically Paul had this concept and he had this passage in mind. I believe it might be mentioned one other place. I think I saw it in a different prophet where it talked about seed and about bread. Let's just pick up in chapter 9, verse 5. We'll just read part of the chapter. And this is in the context of, yeah, there were some needs in like a different city, in a different state, in a different region. And some Christians were struggling and they didn't have enough. And so a group of people from a different area heard about it and they said, well, let's put our bucks together and let's send our dollars there or our drachma there or whatever they ended up sending. And that's the context of this. So verse 5, so I thought it necessary to urge the brothers that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift. So they promised it and now it was time to deliver. And Paul wants to make sure for their welfare and for the welfare of where the gift was going that they actually delivered the gift that they said they were going to, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness. What does that mean? Well, you know, you pull it all together. I mean, can you imagine if we took an offering this morning and it was like $25,000 and we were going to send it over to, overseas, and then we kept it for a week or we kept it for a month or we kept it for 6 months or whatever. Yeah, and then, you know, the elders get together and we go, oh my gosh, we're like, $10,000 short this month, you know, and that's what happens, right? That's just the nature of life. And so Paul's saying, you know, you thought about this in your heart. The word came down from heaven. It inspired you. Now it's time to follow through with what God was asking you to do. So he uses the opportunity to teach these people because he wants them to be free. He wants them to be blessed. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So as God's blessing comes down into our life, if we want to be stingy with his blessing, whatever, time, talents, and treasures, all of what we have been given by God, then what are we going to get back? And you know this is true. Grateful people have spacious lives. Misers don't have spacious lives. They may have lots of stuff, whatever that stuff might be, but they don't live in a spacious place, do they? Each one must do as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So when I give my time, I give my gifts, I give my money, when I give my resources, I have to do it because I want to do it. Because what did I say earlier? God doesn't need it. God doesn't need it. It's the blessing of being involved in the process. Now, another person might need it, you know, but God doesn't need it. He is able, verse 8, to make all grace abound to you. Oh, wait, go back to verse 7. Each one must do as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, For God likes a cheerful giver. You know, now, when you think about God as a giver, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier, is everything that God gave, was it pleasant to give? No. Some of the best things that he gave were the most painful things to give. And yet, God was a cheerful and joyful giver. Why? Because God knew that what came out at the end would be worth what was put in on the front end. He knew it. He understood that because he's God. And he wants us to live the same way. Verse 8, God is able to make all grace abound to you so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have abundance for every good deed. As is written, he scattered abroad. He gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. You know, when we give of our time and our talents and treasures, it goes to people, right? Or it should. At least it's going to us, one people, right? Or one group of people. But it's meant to go to people. Now, he who supplies, and here it is, he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food. Now, we've kind of talked about the context of the food, right? And of the water that comes down from heaven. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. And this is the multiplication thing that you were trying to describe, Josh. It's when you give in God, it multiplies. And then when it multiplies, it increases the harvest of what you have been able to do with what God has given you, and you've invested it, and that's what the harvest of righteousness. But what's cool about this is not only are we instructed in the benefits of it, here's one of the great results. You will be enriched in everything for all liberality. As you engage in this process of recognizing who owns what and why we do what we do, it's going to enrich you as far as being a generous person. It's going to make you more generous. It's going to give you a heart not to go, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have given that away. It's going to be, I've given that away. I want to give more because God has revealed to me what my sacrifice or what my giving, whatever it might be. And then he says, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God, which is the end of it. You know, we give our offerings and then they produce thanksgiving to God. And then he goes on to talking about the book. And this is where down in verse 15, where he says, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And I always think about that when I think about, I'll tell you, the money part of it, that's the least issue for me in my life as far as parting with. It's a lot more difficult to part with my abilities, my gifts, and my talents and not expect something back from them. And it's certainly very difficult for me when it comes to my time because my time is something that I just really value. So every time God says, I want some of your time, or when he says, I want you to use your gifts in this way, or when he says to, usually to us together, say to Bernie and I want some of your money, I want some of your resources, whatever that would look like, then I'm experiencing what it means to sacrifice a part of who I am. Because what's cool is I don't have to do any of it. I don't have to give any of those things. I can live the life of a miser. I might even be able to come up with a biblical argument for I'll still get into heaven. But I'm not sure that I would get in abundantly like God wants me to. Okay, so that's the nature and just the general teaching on giving. And before the kids get back, I'm not very adept at this, but I'll try to figure out how to do it. Does it use a separate display? I'm already mirrored? Oh, cool. Check this out. So this week, and we're celebrating our 40th year this year. Cool, huh? Bernie and I were just sitting there the other day going, oh my gosh, it's been 40 years since we've been together as a fellowship. We actually started meeting in January in a Bible study before I left the church that I was at that particular point, and then we met for a number of months to do things appropriately and to pray and to be ready. And so I was thinking about that, and we're going to be talking about that because typically what do organizations do or what do groups of people do when, you know, when you're going to celebrate your 40th year, right? You put an ad in the paper, right, and then you go to all the people you know and you say, hey, you know, come on back. But we're not sure anybody would come back. So we're looking for other ways to deal with this. So the way we're going to do that is we're going to think in terms of how has God blessed us over these years, and what has God multiplied based on seed to the sower and bread to the eater, and then what is our role moving forward as far as investing what God has planted here from a kingdom perspective, okay? And, you know, we'll talk about maybe parts of our story, but we're not going to have a party. It's just going to be like one big nine-month party, and you're invited to it. So several of the things that we're working on together is not just to get us to read together, because I run into this all the time, you know. People don't read their Bibles. And so how are we going to help people to read their Bibles? And years ago, I had a called Bread of Life Institute, and we'd go through all the books of the Bible. That was really effective for a lot of people. A lot of you benefited from doing that as we did that together. But that was that season. And now this season is, okay, how do we take that and get other people reading along with us? So that's what this is. And so every week there's, and I put these up yesterday, so you get your book-by-book post will come on a Saturday for the next week. Okay, and so that you can kind of count on that to happen every time during the week. And that is, so our reading this week is Genesis 12 through 20 and Job 8 through 14. So we're going to go through that together. And if that fits you, or maybe you take a part of it and use it with somebody that, you know, we had a couple come over the other night, a guy and his girlfriend. They're kind of young, and they came over, and they're reading through Genesis, and we had a great conversation, and it was a nice connection. I don't know if they're reading through Genesis through this, but that doesn't matter. The point is that we look for connections. So that's one thing you're going to see every week. The second thing is then the daystreamers thing. And the daystreamers thing is 7 days. And so as you can see, they're cleverly put under the day of the week, or excuse me, the day of the month. So the 14th, the 15th, it's very small, you know, very easy to do, very digestible. And then on every Wednesday, and Bernie and I do our best that we possibly can, is we try to get this out at that particular point. And whatever we're talking about in the heart times, whatever we're talking about on Sunday morning, we try to reflect that in that. Rod?
Where are you?
I'm at fourstream.com. Good question. You were just asking that administratively, weren't you? Yeah. Anyway, so you'll always see those three posts. And then you can go back if you want to read with somebody. That gives you a format for doing it. And basically what we're doing with the daystreamers is we're taking every epic verse in the scriptures, most of them, and focusing on those to give you something easy to read for the week. So there you go.